Hey everyone, this is John.
This is YS.
And this is Ryan.
And this is the Nintendo Show, the best in Nintendo podcast on the internet. It's the official show for the month of August 2022. So we're going to mostly talk about new games. We got lots of games to get through. We're not going to spend any much time on news. There are some new games that were announced, and then we'll have a little bit of talk about some games coming out in September, but the bulk of the show will be about new games we're actually playing. And that'll be good.
Yeah.
You guys doing all right? Everything good?
Yeah, doing pretty well. I got next month, this coming 2 days, Monday and Tuesday off.
All right, because it's a holiday in the U.S.
No, I actually just put in some time off. I've got like 18 days of PTO to use before the end of the year, which is a lot.
End of the fiscal year or calendar year? It's apropos of nothing.
Calendar year, yeah. Well, because I work on mutual funds, so yeah, you're right. Like, different clients have different fiscal year ends. A lot of them have fiscal year ends. For me, at least, on 12/31, but some are on 10/31, some are on 4/30. So,
yeah.
Work ramps up and down based on those.
For me, all of my PTO is sort of replenished and a certain amount needs to be used up by like the anniversary date of me working there.
Oh, okay.
Which has to be confusing as fuck for people who work in payroll, because if like everyone's PTO revolves around when it was you started working, most people's are going to be different. There's 365 different cycles that you have to be looking at for payroll.
It's probably even more complex, but I kind of prefer the whole you just. Every pay cycle, you accrue that much more PTO.
Mm.
So that way you just have a balance and you're not allowed to exceed a certain balance. And if you exceed that, then you lose it. Like, I think that's kind of the way to do it. But that's either
here or there.
And my company does have a policy where we can roll forward 5 days into next year if we don't use them. So.
Right. So how it works for me, I actually don't know if there's a cap. I will never reach a cap. I will always use up all that PTO.
As you should. It's yours.
And... But it accrues throughout the year. You know, the more hours you're working, the more you're going to accrue, like, PTO. But then you also get, like, your standard X amount of vacation, depending on how long you've been there. And you can roll over 5 days, 40 hours from year to year. But that PTO that you're accruing, that just rolls over infinitely. Whatever PTO you accrue that you haven't used, that just keeps moving forward until forever. I don't think that's capped.
I like to take this year off.
Wouldn't it be amazing?
Just have it with the company for...
I could crunch some numbers for you off show, of course, but...
Right now, on show, I only hear the crunching.
Well, I don't know, like, how quickly you accrue PTO, but you would be able to get to one. Like, if you've been there long enough, you'd be like, I'm taking the entire next year off. I have the PTO. You could do it.
I think have a sabbatical or something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that's those aren't video games.
Sure isn't, no. We didn't unless you're talking about that new payroll management simulator.
Oh, God, if only. It'd all be Excel spreadsheets.
Yes.
That's my kind of game.
Oh, my God, as you level up, you go from, like, Excel 95 to Excel X to the new Office 365.
But he also has the job of mapping out the new office building.
Mm-hmm. Yep. maps and spreadsheets. That's all I need. It's all I need in life. Wow, we got some new game announcements. I sent you guys the playlist. I'll go through them. If there's something you want to spend any time on, stop me. I don't think there's anything I feel particularly strong about in this list. Disguise 7 got announced. This is a strategy RPG. I got a release date for Japan for January 2023. Not officially announced for North America yet, but the publisher has been bringing these games to North America fairly often. This is like... a strategy RPG, not in something like a Tactics Ogre, but this is much more about like grinding out your characters into infinity so that you are like racking up like billions worth of damage. This is just like building up big numbers the game. I've played a couple of these games. I thought they were fine, but they didn't really do it for me because it was more about just kind of grinding things out rather than having these maps or actually trying to be tactical about what you're doing. It's just like, now here's your group, slam them against the other group, get some levels, repeat it again so you can build your ultimate character. But we did get an announcement, a release date for Tactics Ogre.
How about
a
that?
Remake for November 11th. I'm pretty excited.
That's not too far away. That's going to be awesome. I love that game.
Wes, you got a hot take for Tactics Ogre Reborn?
I know nothing about it.
That is a week before Pokemon.
Damn.
It was crazy.
All right, so we got to get that out of our system real fast.
To churn through it real quick. Tactics Ogre. I can't remember if
Think of it as like sort of like a combination of Final Fantasy Tactics mixed with Pokemon, kind of mixed with that game we've been playing, Monster Sanctuary.
So you're catching monsters, but then you're using them in a tactics setting.
Yeah, yeah. And, that's interesting. And you have like a big map, and you have small squads that you arrange, and then you kind of send your squads out, and then they engage in battle in an effort to take more bases.
That's pretty cool. Take over the map.
It's kind of it's like a high medieval fantasy sort of aesthetic, like a lot like Final Fantasy Tactics Advance. I can't remember if like Ogre Battle certainly before Final Fantasy Tactics, but I can't remember if there's of course Tactics Ogre, which kind of grows out of Ogre Battle. I can't remember if that came out before or after Final Fantasy Tactics, but I'm pretty sure it's before Tactics Advance, which is kind of like the spiritual successor to Tactics Ogre.
Oh, and it's also when comparing against Final Fantasy Tactics, your characters you build out are a lot more complex, I feel like.
Yeah, you're like mixing up jobs and stuff.
And you're constantly shuffling equipment on them and stuff. Ogre Battle, it seems like you're expected, because again, you're filling out tons and tons of squads with different types of monsters and combatants, so it's not so micromanaged at an individual unit level, because you have so many. You probably have a bank of, you know, 50 to 100. Probably 80 to 100 versus like a Tactics Advance, which like when you get to the end game of that, I feel like maybe you've got a roster of like 30 to 35. And that's if you are trying to get like a dedicated gadgeteer and a dedicated tinker.
And that's if you're doing a lot of like grinding out, because you're not like taking those 30 or 35 into an actual battle. It's more like on the scale of a Fire Emblem, where like you can have all these characters, but you're not upgrading them all unless you're really dedicated. You're taking like your best dozen into
sometimes the meaningful fights. Sometimes you want a paladin with double swing, because it...
Sometimes you need it.
Yeah. Spent, 20 battles getting the credits to get double swing on the ninja.
It's kind of like, hey, I want to one-shot this boss. So how am I going to do it?
It is fucking hilarious when you've got like two giant claymores just lopping up bad guys, and you've got counter, so if anything tries to touch you, it's just like, no, you're dead too.
Please, I'm going to put you directly in the line of fire. Please, I want you to counter me. I want you to do it. Come get me.
Never mind. That's neither here nor there.
But yeah, pretty exciting that... That's another Square Enix game. Square Enix has been knocking it out of the park.
Honestly,
like a year and a half, 2 years.
I mean, I'm not... What a wonderful thing it would have been to have in the same year had a Tactics Ogre game, an Ogre Battle game, and have had Advance Wars come out. But we're being deprived of our Advance Wars.
Maybe it comes out before the end of the year. I don't know. I'm not holding out too much hope that it comes out this calendar year, maybe next one.
I still don't get it.
It's very strange.
It doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Nope.
No. Like, yeah, we understand that Russia and Ukraine are at war right now.
There's a lot of other war games.
But what is this game after? Yeah, it's like people aren't going to stop like playing Battleship or whatever.
And you know, not to get too woke on this version of this podcast, but it's also Russia and Ukraine were not the only countries that went to war around the time that this game was coming out. Like, there are a lot of other countries in the Mideast, like Yemen or the Sudan in Africa. Like, there are a lot of countries at war, but the two, like, Eurocentric countries.
And I feel like if it was just a matter of, like, they had a character that was a little too Russian, quote unquote,
maybe,
that they could have just reskinned it and changed the dialogue by now.
Yeah.
It's like, it makes me wonder if there's something they're not telling us. Like, unrelated to that, this was an excuse to shelf this game for a minute while they try to figure something out with it.
Maybe. Maybe.
Like, again, that's all conspiracy theory, but
it's possible. I think, and it could also be because like they're having an outside developer do this game way forward, so they might not want to like, or they might not be able to talk too much about the development of the game, just kind of based on agreements for getting them to develop it. Because if it were just like Nintendo, they've sometimes been a bit more straightforward about, like, with Metroid Prime 4, they just kind of came out one day and like, hey, yeah, we're delaying it, sorry, the development got fucked up, we got to restart.
They just give us another breakdown of exactly what's going on. I mean, maybe there is something that they can't tell us, but at least explain why. Like, is it, you know, that they find out that like the developer of the game is like a terrible person or something? Does he got some? I mean, I don't know. Again, it leaves us speculating. It leaves us speculating because it seems like there's something more there than just like out of respect for this war that's been going on for like 5 months now.
So, release the game, you cowards. Yeah. Other games that come out, Moving Out 2. I don't know if you guys remember that game, Moving Out, but I talked about the demo. God, it must have been over a year back at this point. But
did it have anything to do with Billy Joel?
No, it's not.
Billy Joel has a song called Moving Out.
Sure does.
Anyone that doesn't get the joke.
I can't place the song.
But the,
sing it for me, Ryan.
I'd rather not. I'm out of time.
You can do it.
Anymore. Yes. So, it's kind of this kind of frantic, like an Overcooked style, where multiplayer, you're trying to get stuff out of a house and onto a truck because the person is moving out, and you have like the time limit, and you're able to do things like throw like couches out of windows in order to stay under the time limit and like severely damage all their stuff. And it becomes like this time management, also puzzle management, because some things you can only move with a couple of people, and you have to drag it around corners and stuff and fit it onto the truck in a certain way. So I don't know, me and Des had some fun with the demo. It was only 3 stages in the demo, and I kept on meaning to be like, oh, maybe we should get this and play more of this game, but then never got around to it. Kind of cool that it's getting a sequel, but that's it.
I have an idea to make it better and give it a hard mode.
Good.
Moving Out with Octodad.
I wonder why Octodad never got a sequel.
I demand a sequel to Octodad. That game is a joy.
The developers are listening. They'll get on it.
They
now.
Should. I mean, we made Pokemon Snap happen. I'm sure we can make Octodad happen.
Let's see. Tesla Grad 2. That's both Tesla Grad and Moving Out are slated for 2023. This is a game, I played the first one back on Wii U. It's kind of a puzzle platformer. I don't know, some interesting ideas when it comes to like teleporting around or going on zipline and stuff. It was kind of a cool game on Wii U, so it might be worth keeping an eye out for on Switch next year. Soccer Story, which is not related to Golf Story or Sports Story, is coming to Switch with a TBA release date. I don't know, I don't have too much to say about that one either. It kind of looked like this soccer RPG that Level 5 did back in the day called Inazuma 11. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm not really too interested. Did you guys watch the trailer for Ship of Fools?
No.
I didn't say it, no.
So this one also kind of reminds me of what I was talking about with Moving Out, with like these really frantic kind of party games. This one also gave me like sort of backflashes for Affordable Space Adventures, where you have this crew and you're like going on a seafaring adventure together, and you're trying to manage the things happening on your ship and also fighting battles against giant sea monsters. And it looks like the game is just ripe for like one crew member just totally trolling the rest of them and screwing everybody over.
Did they give me a horn?
God, wouldn't that be great? Just like one guy with a foghorn on the ship trying to sneak by the Kraken.
Oh, this does look like fun.
Yeah, it looks pretty cool. Let's see, Grim Guardians. That one's from Inti Create, so we've talked about a number of times on this podcast. They did like the Mega Man Zero games, worked a lot of the Mega Man series. This one is more of a Castlevania game that they're doing. There's a lot of grunting between the two female characters that are playable, which I could imagine would get kind of annoying. Hopefully they tone that down. But it looks like it might be a fun little co-op Castlevania, because there's full co-op in it.
Are they the Williams sisters?
They're not the Williams sisters. They do not.
Who was it then? No, I think it was another woman. There was a woman tennis player that notoriously made like just these absolutely loud grunting noises every time she hit, and it like annoyed her opponent, so she just started doing it louder.
I remember this person.
That's pretty funny.
I can't place the name. Yeah, I'm sure if we googled grunting tennis player, her name would pop up immediately. Let's see. Alright, let's move over to new releases. New games.
Okie doke.
Me and Wes have been playing Xenoblade 3. Wes, you got any updates?
I haven't played a lot of games, so I haven't really gotten at it lately. I'm around the 50-hour mark.
Yeah, you haven't played much. Just 50 hours.
Yeah. I mean, lately I haven't, which makes me sad. But for the past 2 days, I've put a little bit more time into it, and now I'm back in the swing of, like, I'm twitching to play more Xeno.
Mm.
So tomorrow I'm putting a dent in it. But I just got to chapter 5. Yeah, it's really fucking good.
It's funny because you got 50 hours in. You just got to chapter 5. I just finished chapter 5 at 80 hours.
Yeah, so you're doing a little bit more side stuff than me, which at the point that I am with, I just started chapter 5. And I don't want to go into spoilers or anything like that to anybody who's playing the game, but there's a certain thing that happened at the beginning of chapter 5. I wanted to get a little bit into the main storyline to kind of get this one area kind of unlocked. And now that I'm at that point, it's unlocked, I'm at a little bit more control, and now I'm like, time to go explore for 20 hours and do some side shit. Because now everything's at my level, and I'm like, Yeah, I'm used to being like 10 levels up on it. Like, the last boss fight was the easiest fucking thing in the game to make. They couldn't do shit to me. I'm 10 levels up on the thing.
I've gotten to a point where I'm still over-leveled for the bosses, but, they're... Even though the bosses are a good 8, 9, 10 levels lower than me, for the most part, they're still, like, not instant wins. There have hardly been any times where I've been in any real danger, but it's not like I can just put the controller down and walk away. I've still had to actually engage in the fights to get through them.
I mean, I wish I could just turn off experience gain and just do class points, because I want to level up my classes, but I don't want to get too over-leveled.
That would be nice. That's a good idea.
I would like these bosses to be a challenge, because that last fight, like, they weren't even at half health, and I hit the chain attack, and then they were done. Like, they were just...
Oh, yeah.
It's absurd. So, I mean, it's like, I could just not chain attack, and the fight takes longer, or I could just chain attack and end it now. Like, it's just...
But that's the thing. Like, if you know what you're doing in those chain attacks, yeah, you can get them to, like, the two-thirds mark, and...
Just end it. Yeah. Like, it's pretty absurd, and that's... It makes me sad because I want to go and explore, but now I'm going to be too high level if I go and explore.
Well, they're still, like, super bosses. And, like, if you're the type of person, if you just want to mainline the game and get through to the end and then do all the side stuff, and that might actually be to your advantage, because when you get to the post-game, so I've heard, you actually can adjust your level and actually lower your level to where, you know, when you have a lower level, like, experience is going to scale, so you can... upgrade jobs, your classes faster if you're at a lower level. I don't know why you would need to at that point. You've finished the game. I guess
for the super bosses, or if you want to make certain fights more challenging.
But to each their own.
They do that in New Game Plus with Xenoblade 2. You can just adjust your level like that.
It's true. Maybe there'll be a New Game Plus in this one too.
Yeah.
It seems likely.
I feel like that should just be a feature right out of the gate. Or at least make the bosses scale with you.
Well, you can adjust the difficulty level. You can bump it up to hard.
I may do that. I'm probably gonna do that.
But yeah, like right now
I'm kicking their teeth in. I'm laying them on the curb and just stomping their face, and there's just nothing they can do.
It's a good idea to be able to scale yourself, like lower your level and bank it for later if you want to from the beginning. Because, like, to me, like, the fun part of the game is, like, going out and, like, okay, well, what am I going to find now? And it almost reaches that level of, like, Breath of the Wild, to where you just kind of want to wander around and find shit.
I think it does it more than Breath of the Wild. Because Breath of the Wild, you do want to explore around and see things. But this game kind of rewards you a little bit more than Breath of the Wild for doing that. I mean, Breath of the Wild, you're going to find a sword that's kind of breaking 10 swings, so to speak.
And if you liked it, mark it on your map. Go get it later.
Yeah, exactly. But in this one, like, there's always going to be crates. There's going to be husks. There are going to be little areas with other kind of enemies to fight. Like, this, I think this game is really rewarding you to explore. Like, I now hit 51, 52, and there's an area back in the first area down this waterfall. I'm like, oh, shit, I can go down there now. Like, it's...
I know the area you're talking about,
There's stuff that I can now do. I want to backtrack for just no reason other than I want to see what's over there.
I think the reward is different in Breath of the Wild. And Xenoblade is very much more of like a hardcore JRPG, which is not what Zelda's going for. Because, like, to your point, in Xenoblade, you are going to find, like, the loot. Things that will, like, you'll find, like, a little piece of gear or a accessory that'll clutter up your inventory
anymore.
You'll find no pawn coins. You'll find things that will allow you to continue to churn the upgrade system in the game. Whereas in Breath of the Wild, like, that's it's an adventure game. That's not really what Zelda's going for. So rather than having all of this like stuff, it's more
just for the joy of seeing what's over there.
Right, the geography. And actually being able to, and actually navigating through the geography is the reward in itself. And that's, you know, Xenoblade's not trying to be like the big go anywhere exploration game, which is what Zelda's going for. But Zelda is so rewarding just to be able to like scale a cliff and find creative ways to going around. Whereas Xenoblade is much more of an RPG. It's like, okay, you can walk over that area. There's going to be an obstacle in the way, maybe a field skill. Maybe it's blocked off somehow until, you know, you get the HM or whatever. Or maybe it's just blocked off by a high-level enemy. It's a different flavor. But, you know, I agree that they do a great job of making it rewarding. And, like, giving you all, like, this cool loot or just, like, really outlandish stuff to look at. Or maybe just, like, this eureka moment. Like, hey, didn't know I could get here. And then you find yourself there. Really good.
I'm probably just gonna bump up the difficulty. That was a good point. I didn't even think of that. But right now, it's just it's too fucking easy. Mm. Like I'm too strong.
You're too good at this.
I'm too good at this fucking game.
But that's our Xenoblade update.
Ryan, when are you gonna play?
I am not gonna play.
Thank God.
Most likely.
Play Xenoblade 2. Like I just loved your reviews.
Yeah, I'm glad that you liked me just demolishing the first one.
It was so good.
It wasn't. It was painful. I felt physically ill.
I enjoyed the first one, but I wasn't like attached to it like John was. But Xenoblade 2, like this is the one where I'm just gonna straight up punch you in your face right here on the couch.
You're not going to like it. You're not.
Part of it is that I also just struggle to put like 50 hours into a game anyway. There just comes a certain point where it's like,
how many hours you play in Hades?
Shut up.
That's a good point. I mean, I did over 100 runs, and I'm averaging probably 20 minutes a run. Not to mention the dicking around time spent in the palace doing things. I'm sure. Yeah, that's definitely a 50-hour game.
I mean, I think there's
but it like probably took me 8 months to do that.
That's fair.
I mean, it's also like a difference in scale. Like, there's a difference like being able to repeat something you're having a lot of fun with and churn through it. Whereas just like the task of playing a Xenoblade is just daunting in itself because like, oh, it's an 80-hour game. At a certain point, that's like a threat.
Yeah, and again, I really did. I just didn't like the... if I were to have one actual complaint, because again, I think there's a lot that it really is great about these. And obviously, they're like the best reviewed... There's some of the best reviewed games around. I'm obviously the outlier in not liking Xenoblade. I think my biggest complaint is just, honestly, the combat is so dry. I won't say it's bad. It's just dry as fuck. At least from what I remember of the first one, I personally do not like auto attacks. I don't like cooldowns. And what was the third component that they did? Like, there's just so much to the way the combat played out where it was just a waiting game. I felt like I was just constantly like... waiting. Oh, time attacks. Mm. Like, where like a thing pops up and you got to hit it at the right time. It's like, those three don't make for particularly entertaining combat mechanics. So, I wasn't really having fun doing that. And then I kind of got to the point where, like, you're saying you're over-leveled. Like, that's what I would do, is I would find that boss that was, like, 5 levels above me and I realized I could beat it. And then I just did it, reload the area, and did it over and over again. And in the course of, like, 30 minutes, I'd get, like, 8 levels. And then I would just... beeline as fast as I could through everything that was happening in the game to get to the next moment where I needed to repeat this process. I mean, yeah, they're definitely, like, at least I got the impression that these bosses are, like, big health sponges.
Oh, yeah.
It takes a long time to crack these things, and you have to go through a lot of different stuff just to increase that.
Yeah, what they want you to do is know when you're going to, like, go... Without getting into too many details, because we'll move on here. It wants you to know like when you're going to want to do your chain attacks or go into your ultra mode and when to pull off your big attacks. So, like you're saying, you're kind of waiting around for those things to be ready.
Yeah.
There are other things to engage with, but if you didn't like the battles in Xenoblade 1, I don't think you'll like the battles in Xenoblade 2. In Xenoblade 3.
You did tell me that one thing that sounds like I will like this is the fact that you play all the characters at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You get everybody all at once. It's not like you have 3 and you have to select 3.
And you could switch mid-battle to whoever you want based on
you need to swap out. I feel like that gives you just more stuff to do. That kind of tedium I felt in the battles I'm sure is already going to be much relieved. It's going to be way better.
I just really liked your review because it made me think of like this one guy that I watch, Zero Punctuation Yahtzee. You guys seen any of his stuff? Mm-hmm. Where he just tears it apart. Like, even like games that I enjoy that he tears apart, I thoroughly enjoy the reviews.
Yeah.
Because they're just, it was so fucking funny, man.
I don't know, there's a, some, like, for music, there's this...
watching John cringe.
No, see, like, we're gonna agree to disagree on this one, Wes. Like, the sort of, like, I've seen this guy's reviews, and I find it just to be, like, cynical just for the sake of being cynical.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Sort of this, like, self-aggrandizing, like, I'm going to hate on this. Because it amuses people, and you know, I'm not
looking for it for a legitimate review. I'm looking for it to be entertained.
I just think it sort of like continues to feed into this self-perpetuating machine of like, it's cool to be cynical and dislike things for the sake of disliking them. Like,
yeah.
If all you're going to do is sit around and dislike games, then why are you playing it?
Like Star Wars fans.
like a Star Wars fan.
Or just, Pokemon fans when Shield and Sword came out.
It continues to feed like just this toxicity that it keeps people away and keeps people from enjoying things.
Yeah.
I enjoy that. Yeah.
But you're not the zero punctuation guy.
I mean, when have I ever been like that about a game before? I've trashed games occasionally, I'm sure, but when have I conducted a 45-minute thesis?
What did you say earlier about it?
When did I say earlier? About it.
Like, it's a slow poison. You just
I was like, this game is a poison that you've slowly fed yourselves into believing it's fun.
Let's talk about Cult of the Lamb.
Oh, right. We had to talk Cult of the Lamb.
We do, yeah.
You guys are both playing this game.
We are.
Yeah. I don't know where I should put this in, but like, straight up, I don't recommend this game. I cannot recommend a game.
And Wes, you do recommend?
I do recommend.
Crashes every... I can't get a complete hour of gameplay in without this thing. Again, it's this myriad issues. Let me just say this up front. Like, people shouldn't buy this game the way it is in its current state. It's not playable.
Hmm.
Fundamentally, it's not a playable game.
What was that Castlevania game you played?
Bloodstained.
Yeah, it sounds like I feel like what's going on here is probably a lot what happened there, but it's like... I've seen the game soft lock. I've seen it straight up crash. I've seen the graphics just start glitching out like I'm about to have an epileptic seizure or something. I've seen this game load assets weird, drop frames constantly. It's every complaint you can have about performance this game has, which makes it so hard to say this because I think what the game does is so much fun to play.
I mean, it may run better on something like a PC, depending on how your PC is and stuff like that. Like,
that's exactly that. I actually went on the subreddit, and that is a common complaint. They said the PC version actually runs real smooth. It's the console versions on all consoles.
Just don't run well.
That just do not. And they didn't patch the game. They apparently reverted it to an older version of itself.
Oh, God. All right.
To cut down on some of the glitches that the game's been having. And admittedly... aside from this new problem of it just simply straight up fucking crashing, it does seem to perform a little better. So they're working on it and they're going to try to make it better. But this is absolutely like this is a half cooked raw chicken.
So
here.
If you got a PC, play it on PC right now. But I mean, yeah.
I need you to stop trying to shove your PC-ness down our throat.
I hardly play my PC. I have been playing so much Nintendo right now.
I don't mean to attack you. I just wanted to say PC-ness.
PC-ness.
Yeah. I mean, like, again...
How dare you accuse me of a PC gamer? I'm not that dirty.
I'm sorry. I cracked myself up.
I do like the game. When I can play it, the game has absolutely got a super addictive gameplay loop. It is simultaneously a really simplified version of Hades... smashed together with like a really simplified version of Animal Crossing. The way that they balance both elements of the gameplay where you go do a dungeon and then you come back and you mess around with your village and your people that worship you. And then you go do another dungeon run and you just kind of toggle back and forth. It's really, really enjoyable. It's a lot of fun collecting the resources to do stuff in the game.
It's very relaxing.
Yeah.
It's never like stressful or anything like that. Like, even your village, like, if you guys get hungry or you lose faith, it's not very hard to build your resources back up.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So, start at the top.
Okay, so basically, you're a little lamb. And you get sacrificed by the gods. And your god brings you back to
the elder gods?
The last lamb.
The last lamb. You're the last lamb.
And they sacrifice you only to be confronted with the elder god who has been enchained by his four bishops. Has basically said, I'll give you another chance at life if you'll go slay the four bishops and free me. So then that's essentially what sends you down the path. You have four acts that you play through and different elder gods at the end of each act that you have to beat. I'm not far enough in the game. Obviously, I've kind of put the brakes on playing it. I've beaten the first three acts, and I've also gone through the fourth dungeon twice. You have to go through each dungeon three times to face the boss.
Yep. Mm.
And then once you do that fourth run and beat it, then you...
I'm basically where you are.
Yeah.
Same thing.
Are the dungeons randomized?
So it's... With the late RPG... No. That's a book. Oh my god, I'm tired. With the roguelite RPG... not RPG. Just the roguelite. Oh my god, my brain.
You want to take it from the top?
My brain's melting. So the roguelite elements of this is, yes, it's randomized, where different runs will have different level layouts. So it'll give you kind of like a little map and the different sections of the maps you're progressing through. So when you go to one section, you get X amount of runes, so you got to move through, and then you have a choice based on which way you went, which other set of runes you want to go through, and then you just work your way through it till the end, boss, and then you're done with that particular run. And you need to run through those a few times to unlock the final boss of that particular section. So one thing that I compared it to before was Moonlighter, where it did the same thing, where you kind of have your little hub town thing, and then you're going out to make your runs through your dungeons to go back into your town and do a few more things. But Moonlighter was more about building your shop and managing what stuff that you're collecting on your runs and reselling it to get a profit to build your shop more and more to eventually get better gear so you can go do the higher difficulty ones. But it was the same thing. It had four different sections, and as you progress through the game and beat a section, the other section will unlock, and you go through there with more challenging monsters and bosses. But with this one, instead of building your one little shop, you're building an entire cult. So you're building... you're getting them through multiple ways, your followers. Like, through a run, you'll find, like, one or be tied up by an NPC spider, and you can buy them from them so the spider doesn't eat the guy.
Oh, some slave trade. Nice.
Slave trade, exactly. Or you'll find one about to get sacrificed by the opposing cult, and you kill off all the members, and then you save that one guy.
Each run, on top of having these series of rooms, and usually it's like each map will probably only have maybe 8 to 10 rooms.
At most.
And even then, some will be like areas to get stuff to help you with the run. Mm. But aside from that, there's actually like a bigger map that you have to select. I don't know if you guys did a lot.
That's trying to describe.
Yeah. Did you guys play a lot of Isle of Tundra?
Mm.
Or not Isle of Armor, what is it? The Frozen Tundra or whatever from Pokemon?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. You know when you're doing those...
Crown Tundra.
Yeah, Crown Tundra. Thank you. You know when you're doing those raid battles where you have to select which path you want to go down? Imagine a map like that. So you have to select through a series of nodes which one you want to go through. And some will have little icons that tell you this has a specific kind of resource. Some have more weapons. And some will just straight up have followers. So you could go there and get in like a little mini fight and then get a follower. Just get a free follower, essentially. And followers are very disposable as
pretty much. The followers are essentially another type of resource.
Yeah, so like you can quote-unquote ascend them, which, you know, is sort of a way of... It's another... there are multiple ways to kill them, but that is a way to kill them. That's sort of in a positive light. And then there's also... I forget what it is.
Sacrifice.
Sacrifice, in which you just murder them. And you bring all of the other cultists together to do this, so it's sort of this shared ritual that you have. Again, this game is deeply drenched in occult and ritual. Like black magic, satanic things without being overtly satanic or addressing it in name as satanic.
But it's one of those things where you're just sitting there like, oh, I wonder what they mean by this. And then they, like, sacrifice. So I'm not sure about this. And then, like, all your followers circle around the one guy and a pit opens up and tentacles reach out and pulls them into the abyss. You're like, oh, fuck. Like, like you're sitting there like, I don't know if this is okay or not, but holy shit. Like, there are so many things in the game that I'm just like, I don't know if that's okay. Like, it's...
And yeah. That's amazing. Like, could you imagine if this game, like, if they had a version of this that came out, like, on the NES back in, like, 87 or 88, like, during the Satanic Panic, or everyone was like, don't play Dungeons and Dragons, it'll make you a Satan worshiper.
Like, oh, yeah, this will straight up be, oh my gosh.
Yeah, this is a game that would have, no publisher would have allowed for a game like this to be made.
Amazing.
Yeah, it is kind of funny. And yeah, and like, you can just give your, essentially give your followers poisoned meals if you want to just kill them. And granted, everyone will be upset that someone dies.
Well, like they're playing Xenoblade or something.
Yeah. But then you then wrap up the corpse, you loot the body, and then throw it into the composter, essentially, and convert it to fertilizer. Like, it's very...
Or there's perks that you can unlock where you essentially eat it. Yes. You can eat your deadfall, or there's a cannibalism perk that you can unlock.
Oh, good. There's like a skill tree, and cannibalism is one of your passives or something.
Essentially?
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, basically, yeah. There's five different, like... I mean, again, this game has lots of different mechanics you can juggle, but there is one thing where you've got five different paths, like one's
doctrines,
law, yeah, thank you, doctrines. It's like law and order, food,
life,
working, how they work, yeah, like life balance. And then you have to make a decision between A and B, and it's, you make it essentially four times as you level up.
So each one has four you can unlock, and you have an A or B choice on each of those,
and there's no going back. You can't, if you pick one path, you can't go back and select the other. So it's sort of like, as you know, make the decision, you gotta go. Like, you're, I mean, again, a weird comparison, but it's like you're building an XCOM character.
Mm.
It's like you chose to have the sneakiness with the sword instead of the extra bullets in your handgun.
Right.
You know, like, that's a decision you made for your run.
Really quick side note about Xenoblade, Wes.
Yeah.
Okay, this really quick. You were talking about, like, all, like, these perks and stuff, and it was just reminding me of, like, accessories in Xenoblade where, you know, you can only have, like, one of each type. You can't just, like, stack things that will increase your agility or anything. You only have like one thing that will
be. I think you can in this one though.
Okay. No. And well, you can have like a skill that will buff up your agility, but you can only have one accessory of your three accessories. Only one can buff up your agility. But while I was just exploring around, there I found like this gravestone looking thing, and it was way off the beaten path. I had to like maneuver around to all these different places just to even access this area, and the gravestone looking there was like something about the seven. It's like, oh, there's seven hidden gravestones around here, what does it get me? And I found three of them so far. One of them gave me an accessory that just gives you plus 60% to your block rate.
Oh shit.
And like, and there's a skill that you get from a class that just gives you like plus 20% to your block rate. I can make lands a tank that is just an immovable object. Oh, I fucking love the game
amazing.
So much.
Amazing. That's really good. I need to find that.
Is it a true percent chance to block though?
Oh yeah.
Like, I know in Diablo 2, if you have something that gives you 30% chance to block, it still goes through a nasty formula involving how much dexterity you have.
So I don't think that... I think it's just your block rate.
Because I mean, can you literally add 60 plus 20, find another item that does 20, and like, he just simply cannot be hit?
I have not been able to get to 100% block rate yet.
Yeah.
I'm working on it.
I mean, there's got to be a way that you don't just immediately break the game. Like, no, this guy will never die. Like, well,
but he can't damage shit, though.
He's going to win eventually.
It's a Xenoblade game. Nobody can do any fucking damage.
No, the thing is...
John's going to murder you and throw you in the cob pills bin.
That's okay. You can do damage when you start getting good. It will show you your block rate just like right next to your crit rate, and you can do the same thing with your crit rate. You can have different like passive skills or equipment that will buff up that crit rate.
Yeah.
So as far as I know, it's not like applying some formula. But to your point, like, so far I have not been able to get to a 100% block rate, so it's not entirely this immovable object. But you do have to guarantee that he's going to be drawing some sort of aggro. If he's not pumping out enough damage, it doesn't matter if he's 100% blocking, because the rest of the party is going to die.
No, it does matter. The rest of the party would be dead, and then you just slowly chip them away.
Put it on auto battle. Come back 2 weeks later when he's finally gotten through their 2.5 million HP.
I'm remembering some of the highlights of my rant. I remember one of them I was so mad about was just like, if you take your entire team as they are right now and go back and fight the very first encounter, it took 18 unique inputs to have any fight happen. Like, the game was just so loaded with jargon commands. It took so many fucking button pushes to just make anything happen. It was so obnoxious.
I haven't encountered that. Cult of the Lamb.
So you got your town, and the town building is really the big core of the game. I mean, the runs through the dungeons and everything are fun, and I was having a while where I hit a wall and I was having a hard time getting through them, but now I'm just breezing through them like they're nothing.
Yeah, they could have spent a little more time working on that ramp up in difficulty, because it's just sort of like, I feel like they're, that it's like easy, 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 a little difficult, and then easy as fuck.
Yeah.
Like, no challenge at all.
Have you tried putting it in a hard mode? We're back to that.
Actually, yeah, I am playing it on normal mode.
But I was having a hard time with normal
mode. I bet you hard mode.
Gonna bump it up.
I bet you hard mode, only thing it does is that makes your followers more likely to dissent. Which is annoying. It doesn't make the game
It's probably like they get hungrier, or your decisions and things will make them lose faith harder. You know, things like that. Like,
That's an interesting phrase.
What?
Make them lose faith harder.
There's more faith. I don't know.
There are essentially only three. There are three orbs in the menu when you're in your town that you kind of want to keep up. And one is faith, like how devoted are they to you? One is hunger, how well are they fed by you? And the third one is cleanliness. So, like, if people just start shitting everywhere and you don't clean it up, then the place becomes unsanitary. It makes them unhappy.
And they get sick.
And they get sick, yeah. So,
and which they will eventually die.
Oh, and all of them, they're medical bay, composting. You have to build a unique tent for every single one of them, at least a tent, and then a tent becomes a house.
And the houses are handy.
Yeah, you're essentially farming wood and stone as your basis of ingredients, along with grass that you get from runs, and then seeds that you plant to make just different kinds of food, essentially, to feed your people.
Do you have to rotate your crops?
What you'll essentially do is, when you get to the point where it's fully automated, you'll have a couple of people just set to tend the farms, quote unquote, and that's all they do. And then you have bins, a bin for your fertilizer and a bin for your seeds. So all you have to do is go in and just chuck a bunch of seeds in there.
Fill the shit bin.
Fertilizer too. And that's the idea, is that if you just plant something, if you plant a seed of a pumpkin, it'll give you maybe 5 pumpkins. If you plant a seed of a pumpkin and then put fertilizer on it too, it'll probably give you 7 pumpkins, but also 2 pumpkin seeds. So if you're not applying fertilizer, you're not getting back more seeds to make more plants.
Mm.
So
I find it very funny, because I had a laugh when I started using fertilizer and everything like that, because fertilizer is essentially the shit of your followers.
Right.
So it made me think back of The Martian with Matt Damon.
His poop potatoes.
He did his own poop potatoes. I'm like, this is funny. I'm just Martianing up here.
There's dozens and dozens of different buildings that you can make. I think the two interesting ones are the missionary. And the missionary, you can upgrade 3 times, so you can send your people out on quote-unquote missions to harvest resources. I find that the one that I am always most resource-constrained on is bones. I always want more bones.
I do that too.
So I just send all 3 guys out to just get the bones. And there's a chance that they might die doing it, like, depending upon the level of them.
I was having the hardest time. Like every run, somebody was... Like, I had 3 in a row where somebody just died
for the missionaries. I feel like they die more frequently than they should, considering that I mostly will not send somebody out unless it's, like, unless I either want them to die, or unless... Yeah, like, if you can send him out and they'll die, and it's like, okay, it didn't cost me anything, and he's dead, I love it. but it's like...
That guy is gone.
Yeah, well, and so each... Again, there's so many different mechanics. I don't know how much we want to talk about the individual mechanics, but it's like...
There's some old pig in your village now. Where's my husband?
So the pit, like, all of the characters, you can change them to look like whatever you want to when you bring them in. So they don't have to look... And there's even a randomizer. You can just hit random a bunch of times until you like the way that they look. But they do have locked in stats at the bottom that are pluses or minuses. So you may find one that says, like, levels 15% slower, or like gains faith 15% slower.
But I don't really care about those stats.
They're all so disposable.
Such, like, minor impact on anything of those individual stats. I'm like, oh, who cares? You're both double negative.
Especially because, like what you're saying, like, everyone being so disposable, and, you know, eventually, like you guys were showing me the other day, eventually they just die of old age.
Yeah.
So even if you have someone for some reason, like this magical villager who's like amazing at everything, they're gonna die at some point anyway.
Well, there's also a ritual where you can do where you bring them back from the dead.
Okay.
And I have a couple of followers. Like right now, I had one that I brought back from the dead, and then he died again from old age. So I brought back again. So this guy will never die. I just keep bringing him back. Like, no, no, no. Like, keep going. This guy is just, like, just in, like, pain. Like, please.
He's begging for death.
Let me die.
I'd rather be in hell.
Well, that's a drawback to it, too, is, like, once they actually hit old age and they're in the white robes, it means that they stop working.
Yeah.
It means that... I don't even think they gather faith anymore, either.
They just do shit.
They're just, like, your village greeters.
Yeah, basically. And so they just, they're taking up resources. They're taking up a bed and they're taking up food. So you want to send them or sacrifice them to clear more space, more followers. Because there is a bit of like a weight thing of like, do I have enough resources to manage this amount of people? And do I want to bother with this amount of people? And especially where these people also have individual levels that you're grinding up. Not like grinding.
So it probably goes without saying that there's no like social security program in your cult.
Oh no, no! You hit old age, you're going to the pit. Like it's just kind of one of those things. So like, well, you've served your purpose.
Like that first episode of that show, Dinosaurs.
There's also the other interesting component. There's the missionary side of it, but there's also the summoning circle. And what the summoning circle is you can up to three, basically convert your followers into sort of useful. Attributes to demons, but yeah, to useful attributes for when you do your runs. So, for example, one might go out and find half heart pieces and bring them back to you.
Hmm.
One might actually shoot projectiles. They'll have different benefits. So, if you do find someone you like, and it rolls randomly, you don't know what their attribute's going to be, but it's stuck with them once they're there. So, it's sort of like if you find a follower you like that has a good attribute, say that you want the one that has the ranged attack or the one that gives you blue hearts, like one, put a necklace on. There are necklaces that you can get in the game that increase longevity of life, and so put that on them, and then also marry them. It's a really good way to distinguish one follower from another because they all kind of start to blend together.
Yeah,
but if you're married to one, you will know it, and it sort of sticks out that they're yours. Or you can make them like the loyalty person where they have to wear a white hat.
Are there other kinds of hats?
No, just the one hat.
Just one hat.
And it pisses people off because what they do is they then go around the town and just start like making sure they're like the loyalty enforcer. They're making sure everybody's being loyal to the cult.
Okay.
It's a fucking cult. I mean, yeah. As soon as something like, oh, that's not cool, you're like, you have to remind yourself, it's a cult. I take this back. This is a cult. Yeah. Never mind.
I mean, I don't know how much deeper we want to get into it. Like, it's not just doing the runs. There's like a place to play this dice game. You fish. There's like a little fishing mechanic in it. You know, there's other little things that happen here and there.
There's a museum. You dig up your fossils. You donate them.
That's right. Yeah. You got to pay off debts to a raccoon. It's just how it goes.
It's a lot of fun, but. Like Ryan said,
but literally unplayable.
I haven't had those kind of problems like Ryan has. Like, I probably soft lock, I can count on one hand, and that's it. Like, I maybe have crashed
and
once.
That's not like great. If I was in your scenario where like the game just soft locks three or four times, and the amount of time I played it, I'd be like, man, this sucks. But I like the game. I'd still recommend it.
Yeah, but they should still like even if it was if that was like the universal experience, still clean it up.
Like, it's weird. Like, my game would softlock, but whenever it's softlocked, I could still go into, like, my pause menu and stuff. So, like, and the few times that it softlocked on me, I was just like, all right, briefly saved it, closed the game, brought it back up, and off I went. Like, I just wasted 2 minutes of my time, like, not even. Like, it's... So, for me, with as little it's been impacting me, I highly recommend this game. It's a lot of fun. There are a few things that I do think they should... tweak a bit with the core game, like
the Satanism.
No, more Satanism.
I like to have more control over the weapons you get to pick from, because some of the weapons are fucking garbage.
Yeah,
because you get a weapon and a cast.
Yeah,
whenever you start a run, you walk into it and you don't know if you're going to get a dagger, like a knife, a sword, an axe, a hammer. You get all these different weapons that basically the big difference between them is what is their range and their attack speed.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is that you get these curses that you cast.
And a lot of those curses are pretty dumb.
Yeah. I've had some runs where I'm just basically doing the curse. And yeah. I go into the room and I've got some stuff has played my way that's sort of random on runs where it's like, I can use this a bunch of times now. So I just go in, do it 4 times, and then the map's done.
Some of those curses are really, really good. But some of them are just, ugh. But the one thing that I would like is actually a little bit more walls to get through. Like, give me more incentive to make these runs through the dungeons. Because, like, if you get going on your town, it really is a snowball. You just hit this point where you pretty much got everything unlocked. And I still got, like, 3 more dungeons to work my way through. So, like, by the time I hit the third dungeon, I pretty much have everything unlocked on the town. There's, like, not much to actually do in the town because everything's fucking done. So it's really just me leveling up some followers to make some demonic guys to take with me, and just keeping everybody generally happy. It becomes more of me managing my followers than the town itself. I'm like, all right, it's time to kill this guy. Like, you can get through the town and all your unlocks so fucking quick that they need to put it behind the runs, the dungeon runs. That way there's reasons to do the town shit instead of just like, now I hit the point in the game where I just gotta do a bunch of runs because there's nothing fucking else to do.
Well, also, once you maxed out your entire skill tree of buildings that you can make using this faith mechanic that they summon for you, it just starts giving you money.
Yeah.
And then at that point, like, money's completely meaningless. You can't even craft gold bars fast enough. They give you so much of it, and it just sort of becomes pointless.
Yeah. That's something that pops up in a lot of games. Is once you get to a certain point, the economy of it becomes so trivial. And it's got to be a tough thing to balance from a design perspective, because you want to be able to, like, give out rewards, and one of the easiest ways to do that is, like, oh, let's give some money for this, and, like, have them be able to buy things with the money. But in most games, eventually you just are so flush with cash, you just run out of things to buy that it stops becoming so much of a reward.
And like,
I've run into that in Xenoblade. I got so much cash that, like, if I find, like, a new accessory shop or run into a new colony that's got a new shop, I'll just go in there and I'll buy a couple of each accessory, whether I'm going to equip it or not. Like, I got this cash, I might as well use it. Let's go ahead and grab the stuff and maybe one day it'll come in handy.
Yeah.
And even vice versa, like the town to the runs, like they don't have a good overlap. Like, one doesn't really affect the other too well. Like, eventually
the runs, I want to be in the runs longer, but sometimes I have to cut them short because my town is, bad things are happening in my town.
Oh, things are going on, like, simultaneously?
Oh yeah.
Like, oh shit.
Yeah. The only, I forget when time actually stops. I think it's when you're playing Knucklebones is the only time the day isn't progressing. But when you're in your runs, day and night cycles are still going on. So your town people will get hungrier.
There is a ritual that you can cast, which basically, I think, for like 3 days straight locks faith. So if you max out everyone's faith, everyone's happy, you can lock it in.
Yeah, so the brainwashing. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, if you go away and you come back and, like, there's dead bodies everywhere because people have died of old age and, like, nobody's been fed and half the people are needing sleep because their bed's broke, at least their faith is still cast. So you can go in and fix all this stuff pretty quickly. And then when that comes off, they didn't lose any faith. Because that's what, you certainly don't want your faith to go red. If it does, it's a whole mess of, people start dissenting, which means that they're not doing work, and they're influencing others to not work. So you're basically, at that point, just trying to kill them. And you get in prison.
I do the prison thing, so I just chuck them in prisons and everything, which is a lot of fun, just to, like, throw them in jail. And then I also built my graveyard around my prisons to remind them, like, you could be in a hole. Like, it's...
I think you're trying to wrap up the conversation here.
No, you guys can. You guys got more?
No, I mean,
it's okay. We only need to make this Call to the Lamb the game, but I wish there was a little bit more impact between the town building and the runs and vice versa on that, because it's pretty much, it almost feels like they're two separate games.
And I think they're both pretty shallow for what they're, not shallow, but they're not as in depth. Like, combat in Hades is sublime.
Yeah. It's absurd.
It is incredible, and it is so deep. And, like, this feels just like, like the equivalent of, like, a Super Nintendo game compared to a Nintendo game.
Yeah,
it's definitely much simpler.
I heard a phrase. I can't remember what game they were describing or what podcast it was on, but they were describing, like, mechanics of some game as wide but not deep, and it kind of sounds like that's what you're describing. There's a lot happening, but there's not really anything that interlinks much of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it still is fun. I find it very calming to sacrifice these people.
I actually look forward to the point where I can kind of just get down to maybe 3 or 4 followers and just have the ones I like and be done with it.
Here's this big bowl of Kool-Aid.
And those 3 or 4 people are just, like, terrified. Like, oh my god, he just murdered 40 people around.
It's like, we've got all the resources we need, everybody. We've created the utopia. I just need one of you to look after the farm.
We're living in the grand society.
Right? Yeah, exactly. You look after the farm, you do your thing, and you just kind of work on my resources here and we'll be fine. No. But yeah, ultimately,
if any of you cross me,
I just kind of want this game to get to a playable state where I can sit there and safely play the game and not worry if every time I do anything where I'm thinking like, okay, I'm about to do a boss fight, is it going to do that thing where it crashes again when I beat the boss?
That has never happened to me.
Like I had one soft lock and one straight up crash.
I had one...
Two different bosses.
I did have one boss fight, and it was one of the Bishop boss fights, and this was fucked up. And I do agree with you at this point. I was like, that's something that they need to fucking fix. Where it was one that flew around, and he slipped off the map, but I could still hit him, and then he died off the map. And in order to progress and finish the run, you needed to collect his heart, but the heart was outside the map, so I couldn't fucking do it.
That's how you get his courage.
Yeah, exactly. So I had to straight up close the game and redo the entire run because his heart fell outside the boundary. I'm like, fucking A. Like,
yeah, it's not good.
Yeah, that one made me sad. But that was the only, like, fight part that I had issues with.
Again, I've done over 100 runs of Hades. It did not crash. I did not once... I maybe once had an asset load weirdly on the screen, and I was like, oh, that's cute. You can make a tightly refined game like this, and they just didn't care to do so.
Nice. Seems like they might have released it a little bit too early. Could use some more time in the cooker.
I think so. But otherwise,
still really good.
A lot of redeeming stuff there. I think that it will eventually be a great game that I would recommend.
Hmm. So I've been playing Blossom Tales 2. That came out like the same day as Cult of the Lamb, maybe a couple days after.
Nice. Wait, were you playing a game outside of Xenoblade?
Right. Blossom Tales 2 is a very short game.
Okay.
It's a very, very small game. And Ryan, you mentioned off-air that you were playing through
Link to the Past
again.
It's very, I'm very heavily inspired by Link to the Past.
Very heavily inspired by those top-down 2D Zeldas. And it's structurally almost identical. You're talking about like heart pieces and quarter heart pieces and, you know, your magic bar and expansions to that. Dungeons, and within dungeons there are keys to unlock doors and kill rooms and always... some sort of treasure or new tool within the dungeons that will help you beat that dungeon, but then also help you access more areas within the world map and get you to the next area. And it's sort of divided between... You got your world map with your center town divided between four zones, a lot like Majora's Mask. And you have your order of things that you're going in. And the whole game is sort of like predicated on there's this old grandfather telling a story to his grandchildren, kind of like a Princess Bride setup, which I think is an appropriate comparison because the game in its narrative beats is very derivative of something like a Zelda, or they straight up steal like plot sequences from Neverending Story, from Star Wars. So that sort of... it's not like they're callbacks or references. They're scenes taken directly from source material and redone, and it kind of like flirts with this line of plagiarism to where like, well, it's the grandfather telling, like, making up a story for his grandchildren, so they don't know any better, he's gonna pull from things and make that his own and pass it off as if he's just made it up.
Well, I remember my nephew when he was younger, like, he would like having me tell him stories, and that's literally all I would do is just pick a movie and start changing the names and then just describing the plot of the movie.
Oh, they
and
did,
he loved it.
They did that and
he's getting older and be like, this is fucking Ghostbusters. What the hell?
Did you just describe Turner and Hooch? It's like Chardonnay Kid.
It's gonna be one of those things where
Uncle Ryan, you are not Will Smith from God damn it, you are not Will Smith from I Am Legend. Yeah, that exactly. Didn't happen.
It's gonna be like, get home and just be like, wait a minute. Like,
you never once finished someone's homework at MIT and went from being a janitor to some genius mathematician.
Right.
I did watch Rounders for the first time yesterday.
I haven't seen that movie in so long.
It was pretty good.
Yeah.
But getting back on task.
Did you know Clark County's not illegal?
It is not. It's just frowned upon.
Yeah, it's just frowned upon.
And not by, like, law enforcement. By fucking people who work at casinos.
And casinos are allowed to tell someone that they cannot play there.
Based on car counting?
Just for no any reason at all. Any reason at all. They could be like, you're not allowed to play here. They can't break your knees. They can't, like, smash your kneecaps and steal your money.
Not with that
but attitude. But they can tell you. I mean, they're not supposed to. But they can tell you, be like, hey, we think you're counting cards, so just get the fuck out of here.
Hmm.
And nothing you can do about it. Except try to count cards better.
You're too good at this. You're too good at this. You're taking all our money.
Yeah, it's. I believe it's the only game where you statistically have an advantage over the house.
Mm.
And even then, it's a small one, but at least they're confined to rules that you're not confined to. Not talking about card counting, just whatever.
I would spend $500 playing blackjack.
There you go.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
We were talking about Blossom Tales too, but like functionally, it's really not all that different from a 2D Zelda. There are some items that you've never seen in a Zelda game before. You get like this teleporter where you like set down a warp point, and you got like a timer. It's like 6 or 7 seconds, and then you can walk anywhere and then immediately zip back there. And they use that for things like disappearing platforms or platforms that move around, to where, you know, you set down a... If there's two moving platforms, but they never intersect, like right next to each other, so you can walk from one to the other, you move along one, set your teleport mark to where the next one will be once you've moved away, and it can warp over there. And they do some fun stuff with that at certain points. But they're... I think one thing, so something that they do that really didn't feel all that great was there are a lot of hidden things, and not like just like, oh, this is a bombable wall, I'll come back when I have bombs, or here's a door that I can open with this song, and when I have my guitar, I'll go back and I'll play the song and the door will open. I'm talking about like hyper light drifter level
false walls, where you kind of like, you have to poke around every corner of a screen where it's like, it looks like just a bunch of trees, but there's a little bit of a gap in those trees. Mm-hmm. And you can go out of there.
Yeah. And I found probably about 60% of all like the collectibles, like heart pieces and empty bottles and all that stuff. And I feel like I was pretty thorough.
Did it give you like a map that gives you a sense of where... Because I know from recently, just literally last night, playing through like Link to the Past, once you find that map, you know where the rooms are. You'll see, like, if there's a bombable wall, not only will you have an indentation that shows you it's bombable, you'll bring up the map and be like, okay, I've explored this entire map except for this one hidden room here. And even if it's not a false wall, it means like, well, maybe there's something above it or below it not ever below it, but above it that I need to break and fall through to it.
They do give you a map for dungeons, and you do get an overworld map, which you can't like do things like mark points of interest or things you want to backtrack to or anything like that.
Yeah.
The dungeon maps themselves autofill. They don't like actually, like, here, now you found the map, so you can see the outline for every room. So while there are things like hidden rooms, if you're not finding them yourself, so it's kind of like they're not going to point you in the right direction. So it didn't feel great to engage with all that stuff in the game, because there were times like I would like make a sweep through the map. Like once I had all my like my power ups and my collectibles, I'd sweep through everything. And it's not a very large map, so it didn't take all that long. But I'd find maybe one or two collectibles, and then a bunch of just rooms with cash. And like we're talking about like Cult of the Lamb, like Xenoblade. At a certain point in the game, the cash doesn't mean anything anymore. I don't want cash. Mm. I want fucking like heart pieces and mana expansions.
Well, then, gosh, bad news, they run out of game.
Mm.
At that point, they might as well just give you a door to the boss.
So, yeah, the other.
You gotta buy.
Yeah.
With your amount.
The other thing was,
that'd be a fun mechanic in a game. Like, throughout the game, you're accumulating money, but in order to take on the last boss, you had to get X amount of money and buy it your way in.
Animal Crossing.
No More Heroes.
Animal Crossing.
No more heroes.
So, and you know, I think that works. It like makes you actually engage with other aspects of the game. When the one other thing that really grinded my gears about this game is, you know, you of course get the item screen like in any Zelda game. Here's all the stuff that you've collected, and you can see like your empty bottles and your bow and arrow and your bombs and your boomerang and all that stuff. It's just on a grid. And there's no way to rearrange it.
Oh.
So if you find things, like if you find like a bottle, and then you get like your bombs, and then you get another bottle, and then you get your bow and arrow and your boomerang, and then you get two more bottles, you can't keep similar things together. Mm. And it fucking annoys the shit out of me.
Yeah, John's inner Resident Evil player is and screaming at him.
And especially since you have three mappable buttons. Well, I say mappable. You have your action button, which is like going to be your role or your interact or talk to people. You got your sword button to swing your weapon, and then you got two mappable buttons. You know, you can have your shield or whatever other like empty bottle or whatever tool you want to put on those. And you are in and out of the menu so often that it would just be nice to be able to sort things so you know exactly where you want to go to pick your next thing to map.
Yeah, and Link to the Past, it really is kind of annoying to have to constantly hit the plus or hit the start button to just juggle items. Mm. You know, where it's like you want to place a bomb on the wall, but you don't want to stay with the bomb. You want to switch back to the other thing. And then you just, yeah, that toggling doesn't work. And I don't think you even use the shoulder buttons, so I don't, or the L and R buttons. So it's like, why don't they just have that cycle? What's going on with your...
Yeah, it might have been just because it was an early game on the system, because I think as you... like
They didn't think that people like us would give a shit 20-something right. years later or whatever. They're 30 years later.
They're playtesting their own game, and they're all just like having so much fucking fun with it. Like, why would you ever want to change the item? Just use this one forever.
Right.
But yeah.
But no, we need a third... Think about the player 30 years from now, all right? We need to make
you this... You got to future-proof it.
Yeah, we got to future-proof it.
Or like hold down the select button, and doing that like brings up a secondary like button map. Anyway, neither here nor there. Blossom Tales 2, I'd say like put it on a wish list, maybe wait for a discount. I think it's the dungeons and the world exploration is fun enough. They do give you a lot of things like you can go like fishing and do like potion crafting and stuff. They give you things like recipes for potions that I never ended up using. Maybe that's got something to do with why I didn't find everything. They give me songs on the guitar that you can play that I never ended up using. So maybe I just didn't like talk to the right NPC and play the right song that would unlock even more stuff for me. I don't know, some of them was just kind of obtuse. But
how's this, is this an improvement on Blossom Tales 1?
It has been 5 years since I played Blossom Tales 1. It's probably an improvement.
That's one of the very first games I ever purchased on my Switch.
Yeah. That was an early, early Switch game.
Mm-hmm.
So, maybe.
Time flies, man. To think that it's been that long since the first one came out.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
Wow.
We'll be dead soon.
Yeah, probably. We can only hope. I pray for the sweet embrace of death. Wes, have you considered starting a cult recently? I'll join. Please murder me.
Help them shift into the ether.
If you want to be ascended or pulled down to hell, which
I don't
one?
Care. Either
or
one.
Or just compost.
He'll just make a meal that kills you.
We can do that. It's funny that we have like five different choices to do with dead bodies in that game. You can bury him in a pit, you can compost him, you can send him to hell or send him to heaven. Or just eat him.
It's funny that you get to choose
fate
of their immortal soul.
Right? Fuck.
Well, and again... And,
or six, or you can bring him back from the dead and do it again.
Like the Elder God that's responsible for all of this is so kind to you. He gives you all of these extra lives, and he's so nice to you, and he's constantly pumping you up. Like, the first time I died in the game, he's like, it doesn't matter, we won, you'll go back and do fine. Here it is, another chance.
And you clearly know he's the final boss.
Yeah, you gotta...
There's no fucking way he's not.
You gotta fight him at some point, I assume. Like, it's an actual icon on your save, is a fifth thing to close out, so you gotta, I guess, fight him at some point.
I mean, but maybe you, like, become the villain. You take the turn. And he's, like, willing to be like, oh, and now I'm going to spread peace and love and everyone's going to be great. You're like, oh, there's no fucking way I'm
doing that. I just hope I'm put in a room with all my remaining cultists and they get weapons and I have to kill them all.
How funny it would be, like, you have, like, this really annoying villager, this guy, like, you hate his fucking guts, and when it comes time to kill him, like, you're like, and you get to ascend to heaven. And then you immediately resurrect him and send him to hell.
Actually,
this is a waste of bones, but hilarious.
There was one run through I did where, when the bishop came out, he literally came out with one of my followers.
You were descended
and corrupted him and made me fight him.
Okay.
Oh, I think remember that at all.
It might
wow.
be because I answered because they ask you questions. They were like, "Will you defy or will you bend the knee?" And I think I defied. And he's like, "Okay, bang."
Oh, it wasn't like a quiz game. There's like, what's the capital of Ecuador?
Oh, that would be an interesting one. But
so awkward in that game. Like,
it turns into a game show.
Like, what the fuck?
One of the elder gods is Regis Philbin.
Was this Carmen Sandiego? What the shit?
Jeez. That's it. So, yeah.
Where in hell is Carmen Sandiego? That's our new game. Trademark.
Coined it. Just, we got this.
So... Yeah, Blossom Tales 2. I'd say stick it on the wish list, wait for a sale. I think it's worth playing, but there's so many other games.
Carmen's trying to steal Hitler's teeth again.
Hey, you know. Fuck that guy, deserves it. I'm on Carmen's side.
Who is the Lippensonner Stallions? I think it's France or Spain. She stole all of them. Like, and I'm like, what the fuck does that even mean? How is this woman stealing all of a breed of horse in a nation?
It's like, right.
The things that she would steal are so, like, ridiculous.
Like, at a certain point, like, the things, like, she steals get, like, conceptual. Like, she stole all the freedom in America.
Right.
What? What is that even? What are you talking about?
I'm pretty sure what was, like, she stole the pride of France. And I was like, certainly this is a real object. And I looked it up, and I don't think I could figure out that there was an actual, like, crown or scepter or something.
No, it's just the pride.
Just stole the nation's
pride. Every French person just felt shame for a week, and they didn't know why.
Poor people.
Yeah. So, a couple other games worth mentioning that came out. Kirby Dream Buffet. I did download that one. Me and Mika played for a little bit, but she was having a hard time with it, so we stopped because I didn't want her to completely sour on it. She wasn't having a great time. But we played a little bit of, it's kind of like the race mode, your little Kirby ball, and you roll around and different things will affect your momentum, and you collect strawberries that increase your mass. The bigger mass you get, the longer float time you get in the air. Like if you fall off the edge of the stage, like a Marble Madness sort of thing, you fall off the edge of the stage, or Monkey Ball, you can float your way back up. The more strawberries you've consumed, the more float time you get. And you know, the first person to get to the end gets the biggest reward. You could conceivably like not finish first and still have collected the most strawberries and win, but it's unlikely.
Mario Party rules.
Mario Party rules. Or Excite Truck rules. Mm-hmm. And then we also played, there was one of the mini games was like bounce each other off the stage. And we played that one for a few minutes and then kind of moved on. I mean, it's all like, it seems very slight. I might see how Ripley likes it another day because she hasn't tried it yet. See if she engages with it a little bit more. But, you know, it was like a $15 download. And this very much feels like mini games that they probably had ideas for in
kind of like a WarioWare.
Lost World.
Kind of like a WarioWare.
Yeah.
It's a collection of various mini games.
Yeah. Like, but they couldn't like find a way to incorporate them into Lost Kingdom or Lost World. I can't remember what it was called. Lost World. So they just carved them out and made them their own separate thing. Or maybe they weren't finished in time for the release of that game. But yeah.
This game is very colorful. I like the...
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
Animation style.
Lots of pastries and frosting.
It does look delicious.
Yeah, sure does.
Yeah. I don't know.
Let's see. RPG Time, Legend of Wright. That's like the notebook style RPG that was featured in Nintendo Direct. That's a cool looking game. I stuck that on a wish list.
Yeah, I need that. That one intrigued me as well.
Yeah, there are just so many games coming out this month that, you know, how are you going to have time for it?
For your Xenoblade.
Right. I'm not putting down Xenoblade. I'm not going to do it. Also, Shin-Chan, Me and the Professor on Summer Vacation.
Nice.
Came out, you guys.
Something about that doesn't sound right.
I know, right? Especially like
Professor on Summer Vacation.
Especially in the context of like what type of version of Shin-Chan we got in North America.
Yeah.
Because it's a very different show in the original Japanese. It gets a lot of like potty humor, but not like, you know, like a... What would you compare Shin-Chan to in North America? Like a South Park almost? It's like it's just raunchier than
South
it is
Park
for
is like
humor.
So extreme. Like especially South Park usually has one moment of graphic violence in every episode, even if it is a cartoon and silly and low res. Yeah, it doesn't have quite the punch of South Park. I actually think maybe a better comparison might be something like It's Always Sunny.
Oh, maybe.
I mean, where they're just so kind of like. Not they're kind of deplorable as people, but they're just, you know, they're constantly saying and doing mature things, and I don't know, it's unique to Shin-Chan. Honestly, it's its own kind of humor.
Action bastard ho.
Yeah.
but this game it's much more of a the Japanese version of Shin-Chan where it's more potty humor and less of like the raunchy stuff that you get from the North American localization. But like the Summer Vacation like series of games is not something that's come to North America very often or maybe even ever before. This might be the debut, but it's like these kind of chill games, maybe comparable to Animal Crossing except without town building. So you like go around and you go fishing and collect bugs. A friend of mine at work has been playing this game, and it seems like you can like play through the entirety of the content within a few hours, and then, like, this professor character or whoever in this game, like, has some sort of access to time travel and will send you right back to the beginning, and you can do it all over again and churn through it again. It seems to be a game very much geared toward younger players.
Okay, so it's not so much the American localization, it's sort of like what the original intention of the series was.
Right, so, you know, he might say poop or pee-pee every once in a while, but...
Yeah.
No, he's not going to be... You're not going to... In this video game, you will not see Shin-Chan dancing around with his little dick hanging out.
Okay.
Let's see, Pac-Man World Repack also came out this month, as well as a game called Tinykin. That game has a demo. I haven't tried the demo yet, but I'll report back with that one on the mini show. Tinykin is... very much inspired by Pikmin, except you're in all these, like, indoor locations. So that looks like it might be a pretty cool one. And then at time of recording, in just a couple of days, the Cowabunga Collection will be out.
Hell yeah. I'm ready for that one.
I'm pretty pumped. Mm. I'm getting it. Get that Cowabunga Collection. Mm. We're going to play some Turtles in Time.
Oh, yeah. That would be good.
You guys want to do the arcade version first or the Super Nintendo version first?
Probably arcade version.
Yeah. I don't know what the difference is.
Arcade version is probably going to look a little bit better.
Okay. See, this is the kind of game where I do enjoy them, but I would never buy it by myself. Like, I'm not going to sit here and just...
You should.
Yeah, like, I play with you guys, and that would be the extent of it. Like, I'm not...
That sounds like a personal
playing
problem.
Through Turtles in Time by myself.
You should become a Turtles in Time speedrunner.
Oh, God.
I'm actually most excited for that Game Boy game. I love the shit out of that Game Boy game. I want to see if it holds up, because I bet it does.
I was looking at all three of those Game Boy games, and I was just, like, taking a look at, like... what they were and how long they take to beat, and like one of them, like, it's like a 45-minute game, which sounds great. Mm-hmm. But then there are a couple more that don't have much more depth to them, like a couple hours to get through them all. But yeah, I'm pretty.
And then there's the one that's 72 hours.
Right, there's like the dating sim / RPG / visual novel
game. God, where you can date Rasputin and Leatherhead
and Rat King. Yeah. Yeah, I'm pumped for that one.
And then there's the cult version where you take over the Foot Clan.
That would be nice.
I'd be down for that.
Raphael leads the Foot Clan.
He would be the one, wouldn't he? So, then we get some more games coming out in the month of September. I sent you guys that video. Anything stand out to you? Games coming out in September?
There were a couple of highlights.
Yeah. Like the Dio Field looked interesting.
Mm-hmm. I've got the demo for that one.
There's a demo. I'm going to have to try it. It looks interesting, those kind of turn-taking RPGs, except where it's not like a grid base, but it's kind of like a distance mood guide.
It's more... What you're describing kind of sounds like Valkyria Chronicles or maybe XCOM.
Yep.
It's more of an RTS.
Really?
Yeah, except you don't have like your base building or resource management yet. We'll see if that comes into it.
I'm not a fan of RTS. These kind of games, like, I'd rather just sit there and think about it than...
So there is...
Put on a clock.
When you select your character... Let's start broadly here. I played the tutorial mission, and the next mission after that, I think the demo itself has like three or four missions, and progress actually will carry over to the main release when it comes out, which is exactly how you should do a demo. So I might play through one more mission and then wait until closer to comes out, because we're like a month out still. So I don't want to like forget everything that I've learned about the game.
Yeah.
Before the actual game comes out. But you start with three characters, three of your character classes. You have like your like a mounted unit, like a paladin. You have a stealthier, like thief sort of character, as well as a standard like warrior or soldier kind of character. And then in the first mission, past the tutorial, you get an archer, a ranged unit. And you can select them all individually. When you select a character, whether individually as a group, it kind of pauses the action and lets you give out the command. You can command them to move to a location and then let them go. You can command them to attack an enemy, capture a building, like a watchtower or something, any number of commands. You can also set, like, waypoints. You can say, like, okay, move here, and then attack this enemy from the rear, because that will rack up damage. In addition to just, like, your auto attacks, when they're engaging each other. You can select your characters, and they each have a skill. And of course, they have like their mana pool from which they use their skill. And skills will do anything from like stunning an enemy. The mounted character has a skill that like charges through an enemy. So then, like if you're attacking from the front, you charge through. You then flank them, and you're doing the extra damage because you're then attacking from behind. And then the assassin character has a skill that does big damage, and then if it finishes off the opposing unit, it will instantly make that skill selectable again. So all of your skills are on a cooldown. Ryan, I know how much you love cooldowns. But it's really just a few seconds. Like, the game really wants you to be using these skills in combat because it gives you a timer. Like, the first mission was like, hey, beat this in 4 minutes. And it really wasn't all that difficult to do that. And then in addition to, like, your auto attacks and your skills, and you have, like, your super attacks. The more you engage in combat, the more you're going to build up that meter to pull off your super attack. The first super attack that I had in the game was summoning Bahamut. You might recognize from Final Fantasy. And it looked a lot like Bahamut would in Final Fantasy. And they just like came in and devastated the group of enemies I was trying to fight. You get all your typical RPG things. Like, you have your different pieces of equipment. Equipment will like add more skills and like buff up stats. You level up, which will of course buff up stats. You get your skill points to buy more skills, or your gold to buy more weapons. There's a skill tree. It's a little bit vague right now because it seems like you get skills depending on what weapon you've equipped. But then there's also a skill tree that will unlock those same skills. So I'm guessing if you switch up the weapon, the ones you've unlocked will remain on that character. But it seems like there's going to be several things, several ways to build out characters, which will be interesting. I don't know. I think this game's got potential. It might be kind of cool. What else we got?
I see on the list Splatoon 3. Mm-hmm. That seems like that's probably a pretty high profile title coming out.
Yep.
That Splatoon 3 OLED is pretty cool looking.
Isn't it nice?
It is pretty cool.
You know what it's not? A Switch Pro. We're going to blow it again.
Yeah, that's great.
So do you have them?
Yeah, we have them. Well, I mean, they came out already.
Oh, that's right.
But, you know, they don't include the game. Mm-hmm. They're just a fancy looking Switch. I think I'm all out of them already.
Mm.
But they're limited release, so.
And game consoles are just kind of hard to come by right now.
Yeah. Well, not really. Like, I have a bunch of OLEDs and Switches. I got Switch Lites. I sold a PS5 today.
Well, you got PS5s.
The only one I had.
Oh.
But I got, like, 6 more Series X's.
Mm.
So I got a lot of Series X's. And I even have a good supply of the All Access ones, which are, I think, Target's doing, where you can go through the website and order it for an in-store pickup. But it's... you make payments instead of doing it all at once.
Oh, no.
And it includes the two different memberships. They're online, like the PlayStation Plus kind of thing. Their Game Pass thing. Oh, and, yeah. Like, their Game Pass, which is kind of like Netflix video games. So it includes both those. So you're paying more than what the actual console is worth, but you're doing it over 2 years.
I don't like that.
Yeah, it's pretty garbage.
Financing game. I don't like that we fucking finance phones.
I mean, the thing's $500, and if you're a kid that gets X amount every month, I mean, yeah, it makes sense. Like, if you're some kind of starving college kid, but you want the new system, at least it's a softer hit than just dropping $600 all at once.
Like, when you said kid, like, I immediately thought of like a 11 or 12 year old. Like, who's going to finance anything to an 11 or 12 year old? I don't know if they can even apply for
like a high schooler or a college kid. I mean, this may be perfect for them, but I mean,
so what happens?
Like a grown man who has the money, like, can't just buy the fucking console.
Are you thinking about how do you repossess one if someone fails to pay?
That's what I'm thinking. If like you're some 19 year old and you know you're at community college or wherever you're going, and you financed out your Xbox, what happens after a year and a half if you miss a payment? The company repossesses it. Who comes to do it?
Going on a credit card. So it's like, I don't fucking know. Like, it's
this seems like a bad idea.
Yeah, I don't like this.
I agree. It is a bad idea. I'm just trying to find a positive to it.
Why are you sticking up for this, Wes?
I don't know. Devil's advocate?
No.
But yeah, Splatoon 3. I'm pretty excited for it. They did a Nintendo Direct just for Splatoon 3, and then they had like a Treehouse Live demonstration for Splatoon 3. I didn't watch any of it. I don't know actually how much I'm going to engage with the actual like player versus player stuff this time around. I played a bunch of it in Splatoon 1 and 2, of course.
Because that was like the game.
Right, but I really dug Salmon Run in Splatoon 2. And I actually really liked how it was like this sectioned off thing. Like it was like maybe two or three times a week it would open up and it was like appointment game playing. Like you had to like be playing on this day, like in this window of time. That's the only time Salmon Run was going to be available. And Splatoon 3, they've opened it up. It's just kind of available whenever, which is, you know, nice for people to have it be more accessible. And it's nice for me because it's probably the mode I'll engage with the most. Now that Salmon Run is just going to be
default
a mode,
yeah,
I probably won't play much of the actual Turf War because I've been way outclassed by people who play Splatoon. It's now gotten to the point where, just like any other shooter, if I'm playing the game, I'm probably losing.
So I see we got a game called 13, a remake of a game called 13.
Oh yeah, that's a remake of like a GameCube and PS2 first person shooter.
Yeah, so that looks interesting. It's got like the cel shaded art style.
Mm-hmm. That's a weird callback to remake. I'm not even sure who's like developing and publishing that, but that was like not a high profile game back then. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting one to get remade.
Yeah, it looks like there's a very colorful Japanese named rhythm game that came out. Taiko no Tatsujin.
I don't know that one.
Very yeah. Japan game.
Yeah.
Some kind of collection harvesting thing. You hate the Trails games. There's a Trails game.
Oh yeah, they talk way too much.
Yeah.
In those games. And there are certain points in Xenoblade 3 where I get to a big story dump and I feel like I'm playing a Trails game because it is 20 or 30 minutes.
I'm perfectly fine with it. I'm thoroughly enjoying all these cinematics. They're so epic. It's like I'm watching an anime while playing a video game.
It's great. I don't like when I get locked into like a sequence of cutscenes and then a boss fight and then more cutscenes and another boss fight. Like I need a place to save because I don't want to be doing this for you know the next hour and a half. I did get to a point at the end of chapter 5 where it was a good 20 to 30 minutes of cutscenes and then one boss fight, and then I got through that boss fight and I was like, okay, cool. Maybe there'll be another cutscene and I'll be able to save and I'll just be able to be done for the day. But no, it was another 20 minutes of cutscenes and then another mandatory boss fight before I got a chance to save. You know, if I had lost, it probably was like, hey, retry the boss fight, right? So I wouldn't have lost any progress. But
there are 10 levels up on them, so who cares?
and then after that boss fight was another 20 minutes of cutscene. And an hour and a half later, I was like, God damn, I can finally save. And in the middle of all this, I was like turning my Switch off, putting into sleep mode for a few minutes to like go make dinner and eat dinner and tell the children to go clean themselves because they're filthy. But it just felt like, okay, I can't be done with this for the day because I'm in the middle of everything. They talk too much. They need to talk less.
Oh, I'm on board for it. Oh, I love it. I love anime, and this is like, I'm watching an anime show and then having a break to play a game. The thing that irks me is when they have a cutscene, and then you walk a little bit down the road, and then there's another fucking cutscene, and then you walk a little bit more down the road, and then here's another fucking cutscene. You're like, all right, that's getting excessive. Like, come on.
That's happened a few times, yeah. I know exactly what you're talking about.
That's a little irksome. I'm like, let me just fucking go chop something's head off.
Which, yes, I would rather engage with more gameplay. After getting through this big story dump at the end of Chapter 5, I appreciate it a little bit more because at least it gave you a fucking place to save in between all these cutscenes. But yeah, that's Trails from Zero.
Uh-huh. Looks like two fighting games are coming out. JoJo's Bizarre Adventure, All-Star Battle.
I skipped over that entirely.
And Lego Brawls, which appears
to be... Is that a fighting game?
Also, I skipped over entirely.
Yeah. It looks like they're going for something in the vein of, like, Smash, I guess.
Okay.
I don't know how they're going to do that, though, because it's basically just, like, a bunch of Lego characters. Like, they all look the same. So
right.
Maybe it has something to do with the pieces you get, change the way you fight. I don't know. It kind of looks stupid. I don't really give a shit about it.
Hmm.
NBA 2K23 is out for $60, which means that NBA 2K22 is probably also out for about $5.
So now's the time.
So if you want to play, it's always like this whenever the new version of the game comes out, the previous version with all of the features disabled comes out for like $5.
Yeah.
So if anyone gave a shit about playing an iterative basketball game, you know.
Who's the team to be in 2K23?
I think there's a lot of teams to be, honestly. Oh, yeah. Like, if you're talking about, like, who's the speculative dark horse team, I would say the Clippers.
Hmm.
Honestly, like, the rosters aren't even, like, established yet. Like, trades are still going on right now. It'd be interesting to see what they do with the Nets, because the Nets have all kind of officially agreed to play. There was this whole drama about...
How nice of them.
Yeah, no, for real. Like, Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving were basically saying, we want to be traded, but it looks like that they're too valuable as pieces to move because of another trade that happened to an unrelated player that kind of blew up the market for what people think an all-star should be worth. At any rate, long story short, like, there's going to be a lot of really good teams, I think, in the West. Of course, the Warriors, they just won, are going to be good. Phoenix still has all the pieces there. They should be good. They were in the finals the year before. The Clippers are going to be back and healthy. They're a scary team. The Mavericks look fucking fantastic. Denver is going to be healthy in the West. There's just a lot of really, really good. Basically, Utah's going to suck. Sacramento Kings are going to suck. Portland's probably going to suck. And everyone else is probably going to be really good.
Hmm.
And then in the East, it's pretty much just the Celtics were in the finals last year. They look to have gotten better. The 76ers are perennial underachievers, but they've got a really good team too. And then the Nets, if everyone's buying in and playing for the Nets, then they're going to be really good. So if somebody were to pick up a basketball game, and again, now that it's such a dumb time to release this game, like, it comes out on the 9th.
Yeah, I don't even know.
The rosters are not locked in.
I don't even know how they handle that anymore. Like, way back in the day, I played a few NBA games back in, like, 2000, 2001. Yeah. And they would handle it like, you of course, would get the game, and teams would have their rosters, but sometimes it would only be rosters of, like, 8 or 9 players, like, whoever was that was on the roster at the time. And then you actually had a pool of 3 Asian players that you could just start, like, assigning to teams if you felt like it.
Well, I know that there are different modes, because I have played a 2K game. I want to say the one that I played was 2K18, like, a long time ago. But I remember that there's a career mode where basically you're this scripted character that they make up, and you got to play through the game just like your career starting out. You only play the minutes your guy would have actually been in the game.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure that there's other franchise modes. There's probably a complete redraft mode where you just 30 teams, everyone gets a pick a guy, and then everyone just goes through and you build a fresh team based on totally random players. Like, there's probably a bunch of, I don't know. I'm sure they give you a million different ways to play the game, but you know, I can't imagine this game's going to be probably too much different from what you had in 2K2022 or whatever, 2K22.
Yeah,
so that's out. There was another one, FIFA 23, while we're at it, is out.
Oh, yeah, but the FIFA, it's like the legacy edition, which means they're just republishing a version that they had out before. And they're pretty shitty about these FIFA games on Nintendo platforms. They just kind of re-release the schlock they released before and call it a legacy edition and charge people full price.
Yeah.
Don't give them money.
Moving on, Dungeon 3, which looks, of all things, I don't know, like, it's supposed to be an isometric World of Warcraft or something.
Yeah, an amazing name, too.
I mean, it looks to me like I only watched this briefly because the entire trailer was on a small screen on a Switch.
Mm-hmm. You're like, good point.
Like, come on, just fight. We get it. We're playing it on the handheld. Fucking put it on the full screen. Let me see. Because especially with the way that the game is, there's a lot of, like, little intricate stuff going on, and I can't see shit. But it looks like a tower defense game. Like, you're building a dungeon and then defending it against invaders. So, I mean, it's a very intricate tower defense.
I don't know, whenever games have, like, a title that's just, like, generic noun numeral, I think this, to me, just sounds off the alarm bells for asset flip.
I often think about that when a band gets a name that's, like, a word that's so generic or mainstream, where it's like, how did nobody have this name before? How come nobody's copyright challenging them on this?
How did the nobody... stage coffee pot.
How did nobody just name this game Dungeons? Could we name a game Dragons? Dragons 4 is coming out, everybody. Get ready for it. It's like,
I hope you're caught up on Dragons 1 through 3.
Nobody's just going
to tie them all together.
Who's ever decided to name a game Dragons? You know, like,
I know. This reminds me, I had a point earlier when I was talking about Blossom Tales I didn't bring up. When I was talking about how they were kind of wholesaling, taking plot elements from other properties and putting them in the game because the grandfather telling a story. And you were talking about how that you had done that too with your nephew. That they also do that in one of the finest movies ever made, Reign of Fire. They have this scene where Christian Bale and Gerard Butler, what a fucking cast.
Yes.
Were just doing Star Wars and like for the children because it was nighttime and they were entertaining.
Yeah.
But yeah.
There you go.
Man, it's been a while since we got Reign of Fire reference on the show.
Oh, it's coming.
We need to bring it back. I mean, that's just.
I think the movie came out in 2002. We're going to get
oh,
that.
Oh, hell yeah.
Oh, fuck yeah, we're doing this. We're rewatching the shit out of this.
That month, I think we should just talk about that movie. Like, okay. Ignore the games that just came out. Just
have a Reign of Fire podcast.
Didn't happen. It's fine.
It's just the only thing that
just
happened.
Just Reign of Fire. The cinematic masterpiece.
All right, I'm down.
All right, a game that actually I think looks kind of interesting. I don't know what to make of it. Potion Permit.
Did you guys watch it? Sure.
This looks. I'm intrigued by this.
It seems like it's almost like you're the medic or you're the white mage and you're have a shop you're trying to run and you're trying
the
to heal
apothecary.
People. Yeah. So I don't know. It looks like it could be. I love the art style. It looks really nice. I like this pixel graphics look to it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
could be fun. I don't know. I don't know about this like $40 price tag. I mean, granted, by the way, like fucking prices this month are absurd for what they're like. Diofield Chronicle, like as much as you seem to be kind of okay with it, it's $60.
Yeah, it's a full price game.
Splatoon's going to be a $60 mm-hmm. game. Of course, all the sports games are $60 ahead. I don't know about the other ones. I didn't really check the price, but this doesn't really look like a $40 game. But what do I know?
Yeah, it's maybe a $30.
It is kind of a premium price for an eShop game.
If reviews come out and they're like 9 out of 10, I'll get this game for sure. Mm. If people are like, this is a damn good game. But if it's just like, yeah, it's like clever enough, but whatever.
It looks interesting.
I'll wait for it to come on sale. I like that one at least. That's the second most exciting game on this list of trailers, in my opinion. DreamWorks Dragons, I guess it's based off of that... How to Train Your Dragon thing.
Yeah, I think they have a TV show, or like a streaming show.
Yeah.
That's just Dragons.
They do.
Oh, and look at all the junk that gets sandwiched around this. DreamWorks Dragons, semicolon, Legend of the Nine. It's called Dragons. It's called the game Dragons.
Oh, shit, that means we can't name our game Dragons for
them. Damn it.
Yeah.
Well, it was fine. I mean, we probably weren't going to give McConaughey to voice a character in there anyways.
Not with that attitude.
Yeah. So you've got...
He would do it.
He would fucking do it.
You got Classic Racer Elite. I don't know. The trailer just kept showing cars crashing, so it doesn't seem like it's probably a good racer.
Right?
Look at these crash physics.
It's funny. They're like, hey, look at all this crashing that you can do. It's called Racer.
Yeah. Life in Willowdale Farm Adventures.
Eh.
Whatever. Who cares? And then this one looks really exciting. In my opinion, Moonscars
mm-hmm.
looks pretty sick. It looks like it's a side-scrolling kind of action game akin to maybe like a Castlevania with a really grisly pixel graphic.
Yeah, like really grimdark.
Yeah. What was that one game the main character had that helm with?
Blasphemous?
Blasphemous.
Yes. Looks very similar to Blasphemous.
Looks very similar to Blasphemous.
Maybe like a Darkest Dungeons, but probably not placed.
Salt
like
and
the,
Sanctuary?
Yeah, Salt and Sanctuary. This just looks
I
want to
cool. contribute. Silent Hill. I don't know. I got nothing.
I thought you were going to actually... Or like Hyperlight. I mean, for a game that's not of this aesthetic, Hyperlight Drifter.
Mm.
Sort of art style reminds me of that. Or maybe like the Katana Zero game. Any rate, looks cool. They sold me on this trailer just by its sheer style. If it's just a YB move left and right game, like, I don't care. It looks cool as fuck.
Yeah. And it's got, like, the little splashes of, like, red and stuff for just some accent colors, but otherwise very gray. It's yeah. really nice looking game.
So I'm excited for that one. A game called Four Tales, which is, like, some sort of card narrative game. Whatever. Yeah. Lemon Cake, which apparently you run a little pastry shop.
I think that'd be a good one to partner with Moonscars.
Yeah.
Kind of like a double feature.
The pastry one?
Yeah.
No, I don't see why not.
No, that's the town building aspect. You go there and hack all these people up, and then you go back to town and do your pastry shop.
Don't you taunt me with a good time. I fucking love town building.
So they don't change at all. Like, the town is very bright and colorful, and Moon Scars is exactly how it is. So the same. You just have, like, a stroke every time. Like, wait a minute. Like, fuck.
I just imagine your guy comes in with a giant claymore and just, like, drops a decapitated, like, goblin head on the ground and is just like, I'll take my pastries now. Turns into little boxes with the bows.
Get me a lemon loaf.
Hanks is a big bloody sword on the hat rack real quick as he walks up to the...
Did my macaroons come in?
And this game looks intriguing enough, I guess, but I don't really know. Let's Build a Zoo.
Oh, sure.
It looks like it's some kind of like
a roller coaster tycoon.
Yep.
Type thing.
I think there actually was a zoo tycoon.
There was a zoo tycoon.
So if you want to enslave animals.
And put them on display.
And yes, have them dance for our amusement. It seems like this is the kind of game that allows you to do it.
Isn't it great to be the dominant species?
Or if you want to enslave animals to make them fight for your amusement and get badges to indicate how great you are.
Yeah.
There's also a dino element.
And then force them to mate. So you can get their more powerful offspring.
No, there's no proof that the Pokemon that you drop in the daycare mate. Like no one has actually ever seen.
You're correct.
They just release their spores around one another and it happens.
Right. No one's actually ever seen the Pokemon lay the egg. The egg just appears.
Sometimes the eggs have eggs in them.
Mm. Yeah, it's crazy.
Speaking of procreation.
Go on.
I'm going back to Xenoblade again.
Oh, yeah. Perfect.
Here's a spoiler. In chapter 5, this is a spoiler. The characters, because of the way that Xenoblade works, your characters have... Xenoblade 3 works. Your characters have 10-year lifespans.
But it's not like 10 years as we experience them, because they are like... They're not 10-year-olds running around with swords and stuff. They're adults. But the way that they calculate time...
Yeah, they only like live for 10 years and they die and then... Yeah. But they're essentially, they're being born in tubes.
They're grown.
Children. Yeah, they're grown.
Like in The Matrix.
And so there's like a colony of people who
Spoilers for The Matrix.
Spoiler for this. But there's a colony of people who are like having families and raising children. And so they see a baby like for the first time.
Like in The Matrix. There's a lot of Matrix references in this game.
But at one point they're like, if you want to know how babies are made, you can talk to the doctor there. And the doctor's like, buckle up, kids. And you're like, this is... cringing as shit. Like, right, you're watching them learn how fucking babies are made.
Like, your cast of like main characters. Like, you have three that are identifying as male and three that are identifying as female, and like there's no sort of like sexual tension or romantic tension between any of them until you get to a certain point in the game, and then it's like they have like some sort of awakening, like. Oh my God! We can
bump uglies,
right? there's such thing as relationships that are not violent toward each other.
It's just so like weird and cringy to like watch them learn this. You're like, I don't need this in a game. Like this, the way that it's treating it is like they're telling us a new game mechanic. Like, no, I know where babies come from. I don't need to watch them learn where babies come from.
I think that's the one cutscene we could use more of, actually.
Really?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
It was so cringy.
Just to make you more uncomfortable.
It was so cringy. This is the reason why I don't want to see I Love My Dad. Like, it's just too much cringe. You're like, fuck. Like,
all you're telling me is that Xenoblade now endorses... sex with
10-year-olds. I mean, essentially.
Well, no. Younger than 10. Because...
Oh, they die at 10.
Is too old for them, is what you're telling me.
When these people who are grown in tubes, rather than people who are, like, born naturally, reach 10 years, they die. Lifespan over, they just kind of float into the... Yeah.
I mean, honestly, this is not knowing no more or less... absurd than the premise of the first Xenoblade game from what I remember of it, so that's fine. You know, they haven't yet told you that this is a computer simulation by a bunch of British people in a space station, so that's good.
Is it a simulation or did they create the world?
They created the world.
Yeah, it's not
and he's like, let's overheat the computer.
By doing a simulation.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then it branches off into two worlds.
Right. But you don't learn that until the end of Xenoblade 2.
Yeah.
But there ain't 8-year-olds fucking.
that we know of.
They don't get to that part.
They never addressed
how played old, the expansions.
They never addressed how old Shulk and Rhine are. For all we know, in their world, they are 8.
Well, he says it's Rhine time, so that it means that he's existed throughout the course of all time.
But maybe they're all eternal. Yeah.
Are you waiting?
And don't you tell me that Shulk and Rhine weren't fucking. You will not convince me of that.
Yeah, I wouldn't dare try.
Okay, which one are you, Shulk, and which one are you, Ryan, in this relationship?
We're both Ryan. Yeah. Because it's never not Ryan time.
Which I really wish someone would just say Ryan time.
Is like, what is it when a movable force meets a stoppable object?
It's just, I'm so sick of hearing this said as the girl with a gall. I'm so fucking sick of it.
I'm okay with it.
The go with the gall.
Hey, I'm the MVP. You're all thinking it.
What a bunch of jokers, man.
Oh, bring me back. Give me Ryan. Oh,
that'd be great if you could just turn off everyone's dialogue and then just replace everyone with Ryan's dialogue.
Battle dialogue. Oh, it's Ryan time.
Yeah. So that's the last of the games on the list, was that Let's Build a Zoo, which, I don't know, could be fun. There's apparently a Dino World expansion, too, where all you're doing is making dinosaurs.
We can only hope.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, that is going to be the end. Next up's a Pokemon show.
I'm not sure what we're going to do.
I'm never sure what we're going to do.
Yeah. It's been a while since we've had an effort Poke show, I feel like. Mm. Or at least it's been a while since I brought any effort to it.
Well, you know,
I've been telling you about Pokemon Go, but that's about it.
Unite's got a lot going on.
We got a lot of mileage out of Arceus. And then after that, we've just kind of been... We did get a lot of mileage out of the announcements for...
Do we ever shelf the Pokemon show and just do a different show?
Like, no.
Oh my god. I'm so sorry. Oh my god.
How dare you.
Well, we're a couple of months away from another Pokemon game coming out, so we'll have content this year for sure to talk about.
We just gotta get through these three more episodes.
Yeah, I don't think we've had like a block where we're like, well, we got nothing. We better do a ranking. Like, we haven't done a quiz game in a long time.
Yeah, we haven't done a quiz game.
Quiz game would be nice, though.
So,
yeah.
You want to put the quiz game together, Wes?
I could try, but you know me and how...
I don't mind doing it. I'll make a quiz game for you guys. I don't think I've done one in a while. So.
All right.
I'll think of a good topic. It'll be focused in some capacity.
Okay, I want to win. So, Wes, I need you to forget everything about Pokemon.
I mean, I always lose anyways, so...
No, you won a few times.
Yeah. You
pulled the I won a few times out of the 10 fucking years we've been doing this.
I'm trying to be supportive here. You're making it difficult.
Wes, what do you know about Ultra Beasts?
Very little.
Strictly Ultra Beasts.
Oh, God. I need to revisit that generation. I know nothing about Ultra Beasts. But that's it. The end. We're done.
So long.
See ya.